Blog Talk Radio.
And hello and welcome to another episode of the Philly Mick and Hump Show. I am your host, the Philly Hump, coming to you on this beautiful Mother's Day Sunday. We appear to be flying Nicholas today, as I know he had to work until late, and he texted me to set up the show, but attempts to contact him this morning have proved futile, so I'm here with you this morning for a half hour. And if you'd like to join in on the action, talk some sports, 347-989-0699, and you'll be able to do exactly that. And for those of you listening, you know, on a podcast version somewhere later on, we appreciate that. And next time, our shows are on Sundays at 11 a.m. Call in, we'll put you on, we'll talk some sports. But, you know, enough wasting time. We'll get right into it today. The crew moved from the Eagles NFL draft and, you know, the fallout of the Eagles not getting Marcus Mariota. You know, some people I know are disappointed, bashing Chip Kelly for not making a deal, not getting it. It takes two to tango. I think Tennessee wanted a lot. I think they wanted to draft their guy, Marcus Mariota, but they were also positioning it to where if the Eagles really came up and talked them out of it, I think they would have done it. But that's not what happened. Marcus Mariota, cover of this week's Sports Illustrated, and is a Tennessee Titan. Eagles get a very nice draft in Nelson Aguilar in the first round, wide receiver out of USC. Nice player, fills a position of need. Second round, they draft Eric Rowe, cornerback slash safety out of Utah, another position of need. You figure he's going to probably, they're going to try to start him out as a corner. If it works, great. If not, you know, they feel like they can position him into safety, and that'll work out just fine. After that, it gets a little dicey. Jordan Hicks in the third round, a inside linebacker out of Texas, and yeah, a nice player. But just, you know, not really what I think the Eagles were looking for. They have depth at the linebacker position, and they needed, you know, I thought at that point, Brent Hudley still on the board, you go that route, maybe an offensive lineman. But the Eagles choose to, I guess they thought he was the best player on their board, and so they go that route. They trade out of the fourth round, and I don't have a problem with that because they get a third-round pick in next year's draft. They'd already traded out of the fifth round in the efforts to move up to get Eric Rowe, and so after that, they didn't get a pick until the sixth round. They lose out on Hundley. They lose out on basically anybody who I had targeted there in the middle rounds, And that's discouraging, another draft where the Eagles don't get any offensive linemen. And in fact, I think the last offensive lineman they drafted was Lane Johnson in the first round, the first pick by Chip Kelly. So two straight drafts without an offensive lineman for an aging line, and we questioned whether or not they should be looking there with the loss of Todd Harriman's, the seemingly pending loss of Evan Mathis, as Chip Kelly afterwards talked very openly about the fact that they've tried to trade him for 2 years now, unable to get that done. And I almost felt like that was a call out to Mathis, telling him, hey, look, man, you think you're worth so much? Well, we don't think so, and apparently nobody else does either. And so Evan Mathis, as of right now, still an Eagle. I would suspect they won't just release him. They won't go the DeSean Jackson route with him. It'll basically be, you know, you're here, you're an Eagle, and if you don't like it, you can just not play football this year. So, I mean, that's never a good thing to do because you want your players to be happy, but at the end of the day, it's a business, and you're not going to just give away your players for free. Mathis, as of now, an Eagle. Whether or not he's going to stay an Eagle, stay tuned. You never know. And with Chip Kelly, he really could be trying to make a move. The other Eagle in question that we thought might get traded on draft day was Michael Kendricks. And especially after the drafting of Jordan Hicks, I really believe that Kendricks would get traded. And the rumor is now that he will at some point, that they tried to trade him for a second-round pick last week, and no takers. I wonder now, because of the fact that you're going to need to lock him up long-term, he's going into the last year of his contract, and whether or not that played a role, and whether or not that played a role in why Tennessee wouldn't have been willing to take some of the players like Fletcher Cox, like Michael Kendricks, you know, two guys who were going to need to get paid. Cox, they just picked up his option, his fifth-year option, so he's going to be here two more years at least, and then, of course, you have the franchise tag you could use, and so you're probably looking at three more years before you really have to start wondering whether or not Fletcher Cox is going anywhere. Kendricks, you're looking at 10 more months before you worry about it. And what makes that interesting is the idea that I've been floating around, and I'll share it with you, see if any of our callers want to delve into that topic. The idea of trading Kendricks and doing sort of what the Eagles did when they acquired Dante Stallworth back in 2007, giving a conditional pick where if he's re-signed by the team we trade him to, it becomes a second-round pick. If he's not, it's a third-round pick that we get in exchange for Michael Kendricks. I think that would be a smart move, especially, again, you're pretty full there at the inside linebacker position, and granted, I'd rather have that than be bare at that position. But it's a problem nonetheless, because you can only afford to pay so many people. And I'd really like to see a player of Michael Kendricks' caliber. If we're going to not re-sign him at the end of the year, I'd rather get something for him, because I think what you get in exchange might be worth more than just a year of Michael Kendricks' services before he leaves. Because in this league, you got to know that you're planning not just for this year and not just for next year. You're planning for 3-4 years down the road. And I don't know if Chip Kelly quite gets that. I think maybe he showed signs of getting that by not selling the farm to go up and get Marcus Mariota. Because from the rumors coming out, that move was just going to cost them way too much. But I want to shelve that talk for a little bit for right now. Get back into the Eagles. As you guys know, the Philly Nick and I, we could sit here and talk Eagles all day. And I could talk Eagles all day into an empty airway without a problem. But there are three other Philadelphia sports teams that we've kind of been overlooking for the last few months. As so much talk about the Eagles and their draft, and now that that's in the back burner, I want to delve into maybe some of the Sixers, Flyers, and Phillies talk. I know for the Flyers, in my opinion, there's been a desperate need for a change in culture for a long time. This team, it seems like they've been stuck in their one mindset, the 1975 mindset. And, you know, Snyder and the crew down there at the Wells Fargo Center, I don't think they realize it's not 1975 anymore. It's time to change things up, go, you know, get a fresh perspective. I like Hextall as GM, because even though he was a Flyer, he did general manage other places, in particular Los Angeles, where he won 2 Stanley Cups. And I really think if you take the handcuffs off him, he'll do some good work. Hopefully he gets, you know, a smart coach in here that has some different ideas. I've heard a lot about them wanting to go after Ken Hitchcock. I don't know if that's necessarily the route you want to go. I personally would like the idea of maybe hiring, you know, a Nashville's bench coach or something like that. Get somebody in here with a different perspective, somebody who will change the system, because the current system hasn't worked for 40 years. I mean, 40 years without a championship is a long time. And I think that's when you got to start recognizing maybe your way isn't the only way. The only way maybe it's not the right way. And, you know, the game's changed a lot over the last 40 years. You know, the fighting, the, you know, mashing people up in the corners, that's not the NHL. That's not what's going to make you successful anymore. You've got to be able to play in space, bring the puck in, set it up, good, clean passing. You know, I heard a adage a few years ago that in Europe and in other parts of the world, they teach, you know, passing, creativity, and how to set up plays. In North America, United States, and Canada, they teach how to break up plays, how to play good defensive hockey. And with the game, and not only hockey, but it seems every sport is geared more towards offense and scoring. Being totally geared around defense is not going to be a successful formula. Not in today's sports. You know, in football, you have to be able to pass the ball and score points. In hockey, you've got to be able to pass the puck and, you know, play creative, score points, score goals. And now, granted, a hot goalie can sort of negate all that. We've seen that before, where a hot goalie can carry a team to a Stanley Cup. I can think of several examples off the top of my head of guys who at least have carried their teams to the finals. Hasek a number of years ago, was 98. J.S. Giguere in 2003 for the Ducks. So a lot of examples, you know, lots of goalies taking their team far into the playoffs. But, and you'll wonder if Mason can be that kind of goalie. I think he's a good goalie. And I think they don't need to try, and too many times the Flyers have tried to quickly make a decision about a goalie. And it seems like every other year they're in a position to either say this guy's the guy or this guy or another guy's not the guy. So, like, for example, Roman Čechmánek had one good playoff, and after he had come in, I believe, for Brian Boucher, he took over for Boucher, and all of a sudden it was, okay, it's Čechmánek's team. A year later, after they had acquired Robert Esch as a backup goalie, Čechmánek has a tough playoffs, and so they say, okay, he's out. Now Robert Esch is the goalie. And it seems like that cycle has been working, you know, between. And then when they brought Ilya Bryzgalov in, and they certainly, I think in his case, gave him enough chances. But now we want to make sure that you give Mason enough chances. I hope that no quick decision's going to be made there about him not being the guy, because I think he can be the guy. But again, a lot of this is going to come down to who becomes the Flyers coach. And, you know, whether it's Hitchcock, whether it's, you know, whoever they decide to go with, they're going to decision. And I don't know if, as long as the Flyers keep the same mentality of, we want to get bigger, we want to get stronger, we don't need a change in culture, we don't need a change in perspective, you know, I don't see a difference. You know what I think is going to happen? I think in a year, maybe 2 years, we're looking at this coach being out, and who's the next former Flyer we're going to bring in here to keep on the Flyer way. And pretty soon, you know what the Flyer way is going to be called. It's going to be called a losing way. And it's a shame. It's a proud franchise. It's a proud organization. You know, we all know the story of how they became the Broad Street Bullies, and they weren't going to be pushed around anymore, and it was great for the time. But it's just not the way the game's played anymore, and it's time that we get with the program, because those who don't want to get times get left behind. There's a little humpism for you. And again, if you folks want to come, we're about halfway through our 30-minute show. Call-in number is 347-989-0699. And as a reminder to all those listening on the podcast version, we appreciate it. And Sundays, 11 o'clock, we come to you live every Sunday. Quick programming alert, though. Next Sunday, I will actually be out of town, won't be calling in. I don't know if the Philly Mick is going to call in and and do his show, so stay tuned for any programming alerts there. As I know, we like to do it together. I think that two guys going back and forth is probably a lot more entertaining than hearing my perspective on all the sports teams, but I'm hoping you're getting entertained and that maybe you call in, or you can call in next time and we can talk some more about all these different subjects. So let's move on now. Let's talk some Sixers. Their next big date to look forward to is Sunday, May 31st, as that's when the draft lottery, the unveiling, and we find out where the Sixers will pick, if they'll end up with multiple picks. As it looks right now, they're probably going to end up with just one this year and then two or three next year. Made some trades, including Carter Williams, to try and maximize. You know, if all goes the right way next or in 2 weeks on that Sunday, we'll find out the Sixers could have as many as four first-round draft picks. But the likelihood of that seems next to nothing. But, hey, you know, even if it turned out to be two or three, you know, that certainly would be nice, as the Sixers have a lot of needs. Yeah, again, their 19-win season this year follows up a 20-win season last year. Just a lot of losing been going on for the 76ers, and it's been going on for a little while now. You know, Sam Hinkie said this was the plan, to build through the draft and then hopefully lure a free agent in at some point. And, you know, we've been trying to buy in. I know I've been a supporter of it because that's the way the rules are set up. When you set up a rules for your draft system to where the worst teams are going to be in position to pick the best players, well, you're going to position a team. Would you rather be the team that comes in 6th and 7th or 8th every year in the Eastern Conference and makes the playoffs and doesn't have any cap room and doesn't have any room and doesn't have any good draft picks, players, and you're stuck in NBA purgatory? Or would you rather be the team that stinks up the joint for a year or two and builds up some good players, gets some good draft picks, and then, you know, gets a free agent, and all of a sudden you're looking at three or four very good players and you can contend for a championship? And that's what the Sixers have wanted to do. They've wanted to do this not because they want to get better to make the playoffs or something. They want to get better and win championships. You know, I think a lot of teams out there, you could look at, let's say, the Atlanta Hawks, who I know they're the number one seed this year, but how many years in a row have they made the playoffs, and how many years in a row have you counted on them being out in the first two rounds? The Atlanta Hawks haven't made the second round of the playoffs haven't made it to the Eastern Conference Finals since 73 or somewhere in that area. So, you know, that it's clear they've made the playoffs and even advanced around, but never done anything more. And that's not what the Sixers want to do. I mean, what, 3 years ago, they make the playoffs. You know, they upset the Chicago Bulls in the first round when Derrick Rose gets hurt, Joakim Noah gets hurt. Pretty sure their head coach at some point got hurt. All in that series, and the Sixers end up winning. They were the 8th seed. They advanced to the second round. They take the Boston Celtics, who they matched up well against, all the way to a game 7. In the end, I think most of us knew the Sixers were going to lose that game 7. I remember I went out to a sports bar, watched that game, rooted them on. Did I really expect the Sixers to win that game 7? And they met expectations. They didn't win that game. And afterwards, they decided they were going to try to make a drastic move to get better. And so they trade for Andrew Bynum, and Bynum does not play a single game in a Sixers uniform. And so that's when they decided they had to make the move and change their direction. You know, of course, they let bite them off at the end of the year or limp out of town. And they had already traded Iguodala. And so that was when they decided they were going to sell out for, you know, the Drew Holiday. They get Nerlens Noel, who was hurt, missed all of his entire rookie season. And then they draft Joel Embiid this year. Nerlens Noel finally gets to play. Joel Embiid, he'll be ready to play next year. And, of course, they take Sarge, and they're hoping who's in Turkey, and apparently tearing it up there in Turkey, so they're thinking they can position, you know, a front three of Embiid, Noel, and Sarge in 2 years. And then whoever you get from this year's draft, whether it be like a Moutier, even a Towns or Okafor, if you do that, if you do the Towns Okafor thing, yeah, you got then basically three bigs up front. And I know you're not playing Sarge at the two guard position. Yeah, I don't know if you want to, you have to make a deal. I would assume it would be Noel that would be on the blocks. And I'm sure you could get a pretty good deal for that. Which, again, at some point they're going to need to get a score. Maybe Noel becomes a piece that you move to get a score. And, again, maybe not next year, but in 2017, I think you're talking about, you know, an NBA playoff team. Gives them the Sixers. I'm a believer in the Hinkie plan. If you're not, I certainly invite you to call in, and we can debate that. Again, 347-989-0699 for another about 7.5 minutes. You can call in. And if you want to stay on, I'll take you into the podcast with me. You can hang out with the hump. As we go all the way till 11:45 on this Sunday morning. And so I talked about all three teams that are in their off-season mode. There's one team, yes, they actually still play baseball in the city of Philadelphia, the Philadelphia Phillies. And to me, this whole year for the Phils is just, it's a giant countdown to when does Ruben Amaro leave. And when the season ends and there's no more Ruben, I think, you know, there will be some happy fans in the city, because then the rebuilding process can truly begin. And as much as people talk about Cole Hamels getting dealt, and I do think at some point they may try to make a deal with Cole Hamels, I would almost rather them not, because I don't trust Ruben to get anything much in exchange. And I'd rather see Guy Middleton, the San Francisco Giants assistant general manager. I'd like to see him hired here as our general manager. And maybe we can start this turnaround process, because the Phillies, has there ever been a team that's gotten this old this quick? I mean, I remember back in 2008 when the Phillies won the World Series, and there was talk like this could be a dynasty. And in a way, I guess you could say it kind of was. Now that we're removed from it, you know, because it's, I mean, the party is definitely over, and it's been over for a couple of years. It's just taken Ruben till now to acknowledge that the party's over. Was it a disappointing run? It's hard to look at something and say when you won a World Series, made it to two straight, that it was a disappointing run. But the fact that that team, they went up 1-0 in New York, and granted the Yankees won game two, and it's, I think everybody expected the Yankees to win that game too. Coming back, you have Cole Hamels, who's supposed to be a good pitcher for you, pitching in game three. And he really let you down. And that was the, in my opinion, game three was the game that lost you the World Series. You win that game, even if everything goes the way it does the rest of the way. That just means, you know, so Blanton loses game four, and then Cliff Lee wins game five. Even if you do end up losing game six, you know, then you have game seven, and hey, look, in game seven, anything can happen. So that really, in my mind, that game, game three, was the game that pretty much defined that this team is not going to win another World Series. Yeah, a year later, they try to load up on pitching, and they get knocked out. And Rafiki, they got outpitched by the San Francisco Giants. And Ryan Howard striked out with the bat on his shoulders. I can appreciate the next year when they played St. Louis in 2011, in the NLDS. And he just, you could tell about midway through, once they got to a certain point, I knew that Howard was, I think it was the seventh inning, I had figured out in my head that if nobody else got on base, Ryan Howard was going to be the last guy up. And he was. Nobody else reached. Howard comes up, and as soon as Carpenter got two strikes on him, I just thought, there's no way he's going to sit there and let the season end with his bat on his shoulders 2 years in a row. After he grounds out and blows out his Achilles, man, I wish he had just let that pitch go. Because that was really the death of his dynasty. Next year he comes, you know, he gets the setback, wasn't able to start the season. And the Phillies just could not find an offensive groove. And you saw, Roy Halladay gets old real quick. And he's unable to stay healthy. Cliff Lee now seems like he's not going to be able to stay healthy. And this team's just, they've gotten old. Chase Utley batting, I don't know, what 101. I mean, it's ridiculous. And that's your three-hole hitter. Everybody makes a big deal of the fact that they need to drop Ryan Howard down in the lineup or take him out of the lineup. He's always batting 103, and yet I don't hear a peep about how he's doing. But, hey, he hustles every time down the line. Just because Ryan Howard's too big and slow to run down there and make you think he's hustling every time doesn't mean he's not working just as hard as Chase Utley. You know, I've heard managers say all the time, you know, everybody works hard. You know, whether or not it looks like they're hustling all the time, Ryan Howard's hustling down the line when he grounds out. Ryan Howard's, you know, he's not trying to strike out. You know, he does what he can. I mean, he's getting older, he's breaking down. This is what big, older guys do. They start to break down, they can't stay healthy. I mean, Ryan never had a great batting average, but he could clobber the baseball. And now, it seems a lot of times, maybe some hits that if he'd had that power when he was younger, he gets a home run instead of a lazy fly ball. Or, you know, if he was a little younger, maybe he catches up to a pitch on the outside corner and instead he swings and misses. It's a shame, but that just seems to be the way Ryan Howard's going. We got about a minute left in the show. I want to invite anybody out there listening. If you want to call in and come into the podcast, it's 347-989-0699. I certainly hope that the Philly Mick is resting up comfortably. Hopefully he listens in later on. I'll try to catch up with him. And hopefully he'll let everybody know if he plans to do a show next Sunday with in my absence. Anybody listening, I appreciate it. I know we've been doing this show a little while now. We've got our loyal listeners, and you know, certainly want to show our appreciation there. And all the mothers out there, happy Mother's Day from the Philly Mick and Hump. And if you're listening, we're headed to the podcast. I certainly appreciate everybody. So for the Philly Mick, and I'm the Philly Hump. Thanks for listening, Philadelphia. And we are now unlived and in the podcast. Again, anybody listening in, I certainly appreciate you taking the time out of your day to listen to some Philly sports talk. I've done sort of I spent the last half hour sort of going over in a broad brush the entire Philadelphia sports landscape. I'm going to want to get back in now to the Eagles and what I expect from them this coming season. of course, you know, several months away still. But it'll get here before you know it. The Eagles open up in Atlanta on Monday Night Football, and it's going to be a big test for them. Right away, wanting to see if Sam Bradford's going to be healthy. He's the quarterback now. Now, I heard one of our Philadelphia sports talk show hosts say it's all about guts. Get used to Sam. And he's your quarterback now, guys. So go out and get your number 7 Sam Bradford jerseys. And hopefully everybody, as they go to church on Sundays before the game, you know, say a prayer for Sam Bradford's health. Yeah, because he's certainly needed it over the last several years, not playing a full season since, gosh, was it 2012? Missing all of the NFL season last year, tearing his ACL preseason game the year before, tears his ACL midway through the season. In fact, had looked pretty good up until that point. I thought he was really starting to get things together. I thought the Rams were onto something there with Sam Bradford. And then the Rams thought they were onto something. But when he couldn't stay healthy, just like I'm sure it would be tough for the Philadelphia fans to accept someone who couldn't stay healthy the way that Sam couldn't, the St. Louis fans were just ready to move on from Sam Bradford. And, you know, I'm sure Chip looked at it as maybe this guy just needs, you know, a change of scenery. And maybe that could change his luck. And hopefully, of course, for all of us, we're hoping it will. And that this work. Sam Bradford did play an up-tempo offense in college at Oklahoma. In fact, some people have said that that's part of the blueprint for the Chip Kelly offense. Look at what Oklahoma was running under Sam Bradford. Now, for those who say, well, Sam Bradford can't run, I don't think Chip Kelly cares about having a running quarterback. You know, he had Michael Vick, and yeah, Vick won the job from Nick Foles in 2013. And Vick won the job, and the only reason Nick got in there was because Michael got hurt, as he always does. And Nick came in, and he played, you know, how many times a year? 27-2. And that's all he did, 2 interceptions the entire season. Now, granted, he was at 13-10 this last year before he broke his collarbone against the Houston Texans and was out for the rest of the season. So, those questioning, Nick Foles, he got hurt just as often as Sam. He hasn't stayed healthy either, just as Sam Bradford hasn't. But Nick Foles' injuries, you know, he suffered an injury at the end of his rookie year last year under Andy Reid. And, of course, he couldn't play in the last game of the season. I don't know how long he would have been out anyway. Then the next year, of course, Nick Foles gets a concussion against the Dallas Cowboys. And he missed a game against the New York Giants, if everybody recalls that. You know, Michael Vick had to come back in. He didn't play well. He was hurt. And Matt Barkley ended up playing most of that game. And it was an ugly game. And then when Nick Foles was able to come back in, of course, he looked very sharp and led the Eagles to the playoffs. 10-win season this year. You know, 10 wins doesn't get you in. And maybe if they'd only won 9 games, they picked 16 or so, maybe they would have been able to move up to get Marcus Mariota. I don't know. I think it still would have been too much to give up. So I don't think that 1 win at the end of the year hurt them that much. So I don't think anything was going to get Marcus Mariota from Tennessee. And I think that's probably the real reason why the Browns and the Jets sort of fell out of it, because they saw what kind of asking price. The Tennessee Titans wanted what the Redskins got, what the Rams got for the number 2 pick a few years back when the Redskins traded up to get RG3. That's what Tennessee wanted. They weren't going to settle for anything less. three number one draft picks and a host of players. And that was too much in the Eagles' minds for them to give up for one player, even if that one player was Marcus Mariota out of Oregon, that Chip Kelly himself has said is going to win multiple Super Bowls. Well, if that happens, it seems it won't happen here. And that's a shame because we know that's the goal of every Eagles fan. They want to see the Eagles win the Super Bowl, have multiple parades and Broad Street, for Super Bowl championships. And it certainly doesn't appear, it's not going to happen with Marcus Mariota. Will it happen with Bradford? I don't know. But I definitely think they've made some improvements on defense. The draft, again, I was a fan of the first two draft picks. Eric Rowe out of Utah in the second round, and of course Nelson Aguilar in the first. And then they added two guys in the sixth and seventh rounds. They had three draft picks over those two rounds. Look for all three of those guys to maybe compete to try and make the team or be on the special teams. I wouldn't expect any of them to be fighting for starting positions. The biggest competition may be at the starting safety position opposite of Malcolm Jenkins, whether it be Eric Rowe, the rookie who I just talked about, or whether it be Earl Wolf, who missed all of last season with an injury. He says he believes it's his job, and we'll see. Earl Wolf gonna have a tough assignment. He is gonna have to become that safety. He's gonna have to learn to play more in coverage. I think that was one of his weaknesses. Maybe that's why they didn't get rid of Nate Allen as quickly as we wanted them to. I know Philly Mick and I had stated on several occasions we thought Nate Allen should be gone. And they didn't do it because I think it really was a lack of faith in the other players at that position, namely Earl Wolf. And now he's going to have a chance to cement that job. He's going to have some competition from Eric Rowe. But, again, I think it's going to be a lot easier for Eric Rowe to start off as a corner and then move into safety if that doesn't work, because once you move a guy to safety, basically that's saying we give up on him being a corner. And I don't think the Eagles are ready to do that. I think they're going to try to make him compete with Thurman for that second corner spot. And it's going to be those two fighting it out. And maybe even Carroll or Boykin even. I know Brandon Boykin would like to compete to be a starting corner. But, it's going to be a matter of whether or not the Eagles give him a chance to earn a spot outside. Since we only have a few minutes left, I don't really want to delve into any more topics. I feel like I covered, the broad scope of what's going on right now in Philadelphia sports. I appreciate everybody listening in. Philly Mick, I hope you're resting well. We'll do a show. He and I will be back together on the air in 2 weeks. Again, stay tuned whether or not Philly Mick will be doing a show on his own next Sunday. I'm sure he'll listen in and give his reaction to some of the things I've had to say in this last 40 minutes. And, maybe give his take on what he thinks from the NFL draft. And who won, who lost. I'd be remiss if I didn't say that the Dallas Cowboys definitely were probably the biggest winners of this past draft. Not happy to say it, but when you basically get three first-rounders for the price of one, I mean, how can you not say they didn't win? Obviously, with their pick of Byron Jones, corner out of UConn, a guy who the Eagles have looked at, and then they get Randy Gregory, the linebacker from Nebraska. He's going to be an edge pass rusher. He's really good. If it weren't for his failing a drug test combine, he would have been a top 10 pick. Yeah, Randy Gregory now, you know, second rounder. And then Lyle Collins, who was a person of interest in a murder charge, you know, to his ex-girlfriend who was pregnant. You know, not that the timing of all that really stunk for him. And he almost really wished that the police could have held off on it for a few more days just to let him get his chance. Because once that started swirling, you knew there was no way he was getting drafted. An ugly situation. And turns out he's not charged. He's not even a suspect. And he basically pays the price for Aaron Hernandez, because no GM wants to be that GM that drafts the next Aaron Hernandez. And so Lyle Collins, I mean, he loses a lot of money, but he signs as a rookie free agent with the Dallas Cowboys. And now, essentially, the Cowboys got 3 first-round picks for the price of 1. And they take, you know, the rich get richer. The Cowboys, who won the division a year ago, now, you know, sit there with what many consider the best offensive line in football, just getting deeper with Lyle Collins. Defense, they improve that by getting Byron Jones and Randy Gregory. Of course, they sign Greg Hardy. He is suspended the first 10 games. I know he's going to appeal, but even that, I don't see how they go any less than half a season. So that's my take on that situation. Everybody, I want to thank you all listening in. Had a good time. I hope you did too. Hope you were entertained. Next time, call in. We'll debate any subject you want to. But right now, even though he's not here with us, he's here with us in spirit for the Philly Mick. I am your Philly Hump. Thank you for listening, Philadelphia. See you next week.